This is Jake McKee with the Clue Unit Podcast. Continuing our theme of transparency for the month of May, Chris Lee and I interviewed Deb Schultz recently. Deb, as she puts it, is an evangelist and rabble-rouser in the relationship economy. She's currently a consultant and speaker, and until recently was the marketing director at Six Apart, creators of, among other things, Movable Type, TypePad, and Vox.com. In today's interview, we talk about everything from the role of transparency in building community to a world without secrets. So let the transparency begin.
So here we are back at the Clue Unit podcast, continuing our month of May and concentrating on transparency. And actually, we're doing our first interview today with Deb Schultz, who has had a number of things to say about transparency over the years with respect to blogging and customer interaction. Deb, how are you?
I am fine. I'm
excellent.
Doing great.
Excellent. So, transparency to you, what does it mean?
To me, it means let's throw in another buzzword, authenticity.
Okay.
It means breaking down of secrets and an adjustment of power and control. It's a lot of words. And it really stems from, I'd say, a foundation of really, if we're talking about this in terms of company and customer interaction,
mm-hmm.
I would say that it really stems from a real shift in attitude over the fact that there is, my customer comes first, which used to be great. People would say and use those words, but now they sort of have to live by them. We live in a world where everything's persistent and exists online and there are no secrets and you can Google and find out things and you can't pull the wool over people's eyes and have a vast conspiracy the way it used to. I think technology flattens that possibility. So why not start from the get-go being proactive about it and involving your customers in what you're building, what you're doing, and being upfront with them if you see that there might be problems down the road. And it's amazing the goodwill you get from that on the back end.
Have you seen any particular companies that have been doing that really well, or you know, conversely, that have done it poorly recently?
Let me think of some good examples.
Or poor ones. I mean, those are sometimes more fun.
Poor ones are easier, right? You know, it's funny. I'm trying to think of some good examples at the moment. Let me put that one in the back of my head and come up with some good ones. I will say that I can give you the example of when I was at Six Apart when I learned how the benefits of being upfront about it. And I think that has to do with the fact that when you run into problems, you know, we work in a technology business. A lot of us working with technology companies and. You know, technology breaks. It's not always as reliable as we want it to be, as we found out this morning when we tried to start this podcast. So,
and just for the benefit of the folks listening in, yeah, this is like our seventh call this morning, trying to pull all four parties on the phone together. So you're hearing the result of significant labor, and now we're all happy to be here.
Exactly. And imagine if you know. There was a place that Skype had where they would explain that the reason that sometimes it's hard to get X number of people on a con call is because of Y, and we're really trying to build, you know, Z for you guys, so we've prioritized our feature set for this reason. If you get an understanding and a reason for why things happen, I think companies and customers have a better interaction. So when Six Apart moved its co-location and its servers, a lot of TypePad blogs went down, and the first day there was obviously a rebellion among TypePad users. And then we turned around and spoke directly to the customers, explained what had happened, offered them up a refund at their discretion based on how much they felt being down a day impacted themselves and their businesses. And you know, we turned lemons into lemonade, and that's about transparency.
Well, I think that example you just talked about, that email, I've actually blogged about before, and maybe even mentioned it on the podcast in the past. That was so brilliant in its way it was written, but also the message, the key message, was so smart in the way that you said, you guys choose. And my guess is, and I'd love to hear the actual results if you can share them, but. My guess is that not that many people followed up on the refund offer, because I personally myself, I was kind of irritated, but then I jumped in and saw this email and thought, well, all right, I get it. Never mind. I'll leave you guys to do whatever you need to do.
Yeah, I think the I don't want to quote the exact numbers, but I do. But I do want to say because for the simple reason that I don't remember them and I don't want to misquote them. Exactly. I have what I think was the result. But you are correct. It was most definitely less people than you would think. The thing that I'd like to point out about that example is first of all, it was brilliant. It was Mina and Barak's brainchild. And really, it wasn't something, it was unnatural. It was inherent in the way the company really views, you know, their customers. I mean, with, you know, they're there to serve their customers. And I think that I've been talking a lot lately about that attitude shift, because it's very easy in a time when we... and this and that... is a cultural shift in companies being forced sort of back into you're there to serve your customers and they'll leave. I used to give an example, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, then in the 1950s, it was "I'm sorry, Mrs. Smith, that refrigerator only comes in avocado green. Deal with it." that just wouldn't fly today. So I think it relates to that, and it also relates to the fact that there's a plethora of choices out there in the universe today. And if you're not interacting with your customers in an authentic, transparent way, they'll walk. And so the whole concept of a relationship economy being deeply embedded with your customer and really, you know, we're using all these big words, but it's really about, are you building something, you know, to sort of take advantage of customers, or are you building something for people that you really want them to use?
Yep. Hey, Deb, can you give us a little bit of background about your time with Six Apart, like how long you spent there and what you did?
I was there for close to 2 years, and I was the first marketing hire that they had there. So I was working on everything from branding to community building to you know, typical marketing things, but it was atypical because I think it all stemmed from a very different attitude.
Yeah. You know, I really, it kind of, I guess around 2004, I was paying a lot of attention to Six Apart and was really blown away by particularly the way Mina communicated about what was happening in the company. And it was one of the real examples that I saw of transparency in the blog world. And I remember one post that you might have seen, or you might have been even involved in, when they were first hiring and getting to know Barak, the current CEO, and about the jokes that she and Ben would have of kind of making fun of Barak, and for her to blog about an incoming CEO with jokes about him being the guy with the headset and the convertible BMW, it really blew me away that they would say things like, no matter how fast you drive, you're never going to get those years back.
Right. Well, and, I think it's a testament. It's funny because I think it's a testament. It was a natural progression from who Mina and Ben are and who Barak is, that he can take it, and sort of the whole company was like one big family with all its pluses and minuses of ribbing and teasing and all that. But I think it was really second nature to the way that, to who they are. And so it's funny that you bring that up, because I don't really, you know, I can't imagine it being any other way. It's a blogging company, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know, talk about eating your own dog food, but it really wasn't anything we thought about. I mean, as the company, to be fair, as the company got bigger, sure, there are things that you have to choose when you're going to blog about them and when you aren't. And I think Six Apart and as a company struggled more with, we've been really open kimono and now we're going to get a little quieter. So that's the opposite issue that most companies, I think, have today. But it you know, transparency doesn't mean necessarily giving away all the company secrets. It just means telling people that, you know, we understand you want to know everything, but right now we're in the middle of, this isn't a specific example. I'm thinking if I would advise another startup or another large company, we understand that you want to hear what's going on, but right now we're in the middle of a big negotiation and, you know, we're business first and we will tell you when the time is right. You know, it's really a respect, you know, a respect thing.
Sure, sure. What do you say to people who say, well, look at Apple, look at Google, they're notoriously closed. You know, what role does transparency play for them? And if it makes them successful, then why should I care?
Well,
or if it doesn't impact their success, why should I care?
I think the difference would be, oh, those are two very different examples. Apple is sort of predicated on the mystery that is Apple and has been around a very long time and has an enthusiastic following already. And it works or it doesn't for them. I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I would like to hear more from Apple. I would. Mm-hmm. But I think that the fact that they create these amazing products that companies are very their customers are very passionate about lets them get away with a little bit more. I mean, mm-hmm. there's also a mystery behind what makes Apple tick. I think it would be fun to get behind the scenes and see some of the stuff that goes into the thinking of their products, etc. But they sort of, at least they stick kind of from start to finish with being this mysterious sort of, what's the fairy dust inside the Mac kind of.
Yeah. I think everybody sees them as kind of an exception to a lot of things.
Right. And I give them credit for sort of, in a weird way, sticking to it. You have to analyze if it's appropriate or not. Google, I think, suffers at the moment from, as long as they, this gets back to, as long as you keep making products that live up to what I expect them to live up to, I'm not going to expect the transparency that I might otherwise. However, mm-hmm. If you choose to not go the more open route, if when a problem happens and it snowballs, you might not have the defense mechanism, that you might have if you would have been more open. I don't necessarily think that everyone has to be 100% transparent. It has to fit with the company and the culture. Mm-hmm. And what you're trying to do. But I do think it is a great way to bring, and not every company has to have as deep a relationship as, for instance, the Six Apart Typepad customers do. It's blogging. I mean, could anything be more personal than blogging? Mm-hmm. It's my blog and Six Apart hosted for the most part on Typepad, my personal diary. That's a pretty good fit for being open and transparent. And it fits with Mina and Ben's personality. It's a little bit different. I think we have to be careful that we don't jump into... Everyone needs to be transparent and share everything. It's sort of like the Wired article about transparency. Was it last month?
Yep.
Was a great article. And it's interesting, though, because... I love the fact that just because one CEO has a blog that works well, like Jonathan Schwartz sits on and stuff, that doesn't mean every CEO needs to have a blog. So let's not sort of jump on. It might be somebody else in the company. It might be transparency within customer service. It could be within product management. Maybe you're more transparent about why you chose feature A, B, and C, or why you're coming out with product A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. I think. It's not an easy decision to make, but it's one that should be made, thoughtfully.
Well, building on the point about Google, too, I'm interested to hear what your advice would be to a company that, the smaller companies in some ways are easier to have a lot of this transparency. I mean, when Google came out and they're the underdog, everybody loves the underdog, and, their right. their mantra of don't be evil is wonderful, and everybody buys off on it. But the moment that they get relatively big, suddenly the mood starts to change, and, transparency in some ways starts to backfire on them. Because now it's just that much more ammunition to give people that to talk about this big evil company just because they're big. So how do you make that transition from a small company that's really talking openly to a bigger company who's loses some of that that underdog status?
Well, I think it's interesting. I haven't spent the time to sort of look, but I'm sure that there's a lot of transparency in the niches at Google. I mean, you could probably find a lot of product managers blogging a lot of different things about what they're working on and have access to it. I think the difference is if Google, the corporate entity, is going to be huge and transparent. And the argument could be, who are you serving, right? Let's say they're a big company right now and they have stockholders. And so it is a difficult transition. Even, by the way, you talk about it's easier at a small company. Even at Six Apart, when the company got bigger, it was okay. When do we talk about this? How do we talk about this? This is important. But I think if your customers always come first, and I would argue that for the most part, Google does put their customers first. They want to build good products and do cool stuff for their customers. I think their customer set is broad. The difficulty comes in this concept of transparency and being open is not integrated throughout our society yet. So, you know, if they start blogging about, hey, we're sitting at the table about to do a deal with DoubleClick, I mean, it's going to affect the market. So that might not be the thing to be transparent about in live time, right?
Well, and that's actually one of the things I've been saying for a long time is that until some of the older generation, including us, unfortunately, because, yes, we do fall into that.
Hey,
I'm including myself there, too. until we start to die.
I'm going to be 29 again this year.
Oh, that's fantastic. What is this, the
11th time? Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, you know, as the teenagers today start to take on some of these bigger roles, I think that the discussion changes pretty substantially. But, you know, in some ways it's a waiting game, but in some ways too, it's a, you know, how do we change that so that, you know, we're educating people about it. But, you know, it's just tough in a education standpoint because it's, you're having to relearn the foundational principles that a lot of people have come up on, not just, you know, changing the way that they approach the, you know, problem A versus problem B.
You know, baby steps, right? Baby steps. Like I said, there are probably certain product managers within Google that are being really transparent and about what they're doing. The corporate entity, not yet. And that's probably appropriate if you're a stockholder. You know, the attitudinal shift is an important one, and it's going to take time. But that's why I'm being long-winded this morning. But I think it's really getting back to basics. I mean, whether you're being transparent or not, it's about, you know, who are you serving and who's first and why are you sharing this bit of information? Are you sharing this bit of information from a place that's about the people who pay you to build products, to serve your community, to serve your customers? I mean, if those people come first and you are very, and you have a straight moral, ethical sort of way that you know you want to do business, those decisions actually become easier. It might be difficult to determine when you release certain information and what you share, but the fact that you share it is important.
Deb, what do you think some of the baby steps that organizations could take to start going down this path if they historically had not been thinking this way?
I think they can sort of engage their, ask their customers questions. Do you like this? Don't you like this? What do you want to hear from us? Do you feel that we're not sharing enough? You could start a blog on it. I mean, companies is a very broad term. But you could start a blog out of customer service. You could share some of the tips and tricks of your customer service reps. You can let people know when you're going to be in a certain city and tell them you can that if you have a specific issue, I'll be available to contact you. You can be, you know, a CEO who has an email address that always is available to their customers. I mean, we always talk about Craig Newmark as a great example from Craigslist, but he lives and breathes that. He does realize that his company would not exist without his customers, and he puts them first.
Yep.
It's a hard thing to hold on to in the long run, but it's really important. And sure, if you're a large company like, I'm trying to think, a consumer packaged goods company or others or you know, a Ford that might, you know, do a video podcast about, you know, the inside workings of, you know, how to build the car, or, you know, why did they make this decision on this model for this year? You can start with little baby steps.
Yep.
You can also start, I joke with PR people, you can start by using the word I.
Right.
Instead of company X in, you know, Flint, Michigan, you know, I. It really changes when a management team starts using I believe or I think or we think. It's very personal. You can give the company, you know, expose some of the employees of the company, who they are as people. I really think that, that dry company website that, you know, is all about the company. Who's behind the company? You know, what's the personality of the company? In a complicated universe where I have a lot of choices for a lot of things, I want to buy products that obviously, number one, work and serve my needs, but I want to buy it from someone I feel a connection to, especially if it's something that's, you know, maybe not a garbage can I don't care about that much, but my car, my computer equipment, the food that I eat. I think it's one of the reasons that people are talking a lot about boutique companies versus large, big conglomerates. It's not that the boutique is smaller, it's that it's personal and I have a sense of who the company is. And I think big corporations sort of need to get on that bandwagon of being a personality. Maybe not Google the entire entity, but each product each department can have an opportunity to show who they are. Don't be so afraid.
Yeah, I mean, I think even in the case of those things that would seem like they are pure commodities, you know, the garbage can and such, still, if you've got a relationship with the folks at, you know, the neighborhood hardware store, and you know that, you know, if you later on have, you know, significant problem with your, you know, electrical or plumbing or those sorts of things, you still might be much more likely to go get that other commodity thing from those folks because they're the people you think of with respect to taking care of stuff, you know, with my house, with my apartment.
Well, exactly. And even with big companies along those lines too, right? I mean, if Rubbermaid was doing some sort of job, and I don't know if they are or not, but if they were doing some sort of job of connecting to me to say, hey, you know, what do you like or not like about our products, then, you know, I may be willing to pay the premium to buy the Rubbermaid product versus the, you know, the generic brand sitting next to it.
And here's a great example. How about the fact that, you know, I mean, being green today is a very, you know, is entering into, you know, people's consciousness in certain slices of you know, our society, right? So if, you know, Rubbermaid, for example, rather than, I mean, I think transparency is an opportunity and blogs are an opportunity, rather than sitting and not addressing the issue of are you green and how do your factories build your plastic garbage cans, why not you know, put out a post and say, we do the best that we can. This is how we make our stuff. We are, you know, we're moving forward. Rather than letting me assume, we all know what happens when you do that, that, oh, my God, it's plastic and it's terrible for the economy, explain why Rubbermaid makes certain decisions that they make. It might be a matter of fact. I mean, I have no idea. But maybe they use the materials they do because let's call a spade. Otherwise, the garbage can would be $10 to buy it. And then, you know, they've made certain decisions, and then it puts the onus in the customer and me to decide, do I want to spend $10 for a garbage can that's green, or, you know, is this good enough? But
right.
Sort of sharing the decision-making process along the way can go a long way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you think that – what's the connection between transparency and community building?
Huge. You can't build a community based on lies. Community building is about relationships, and we all know how good – lying works in relationships, don't we? I mean, and it, since community building is a big buzzword today, right? I mean, I'm not sure what people mean sometimes when they talk about community. I don't think I necessarily need to connect to all the other Rubbermaid customers. I'm purposely being a little overly harsh. But if if Acme Company wants to be transparent, you know, wants to start a sense of community, you better be honest because the customers will know. Everyone will know. I mean, you can't get away with lies today. So you're better off not communicating at all than putting out something that's untrue.
Right. Untrue or, you know, clearly misdirecting or deceptive. Probably the biggest example that you keep coming back to over the last year was the Walmart blog debacle with Edelman of, you know, trying to spin a story that if they had told the truth from the outset, it would have been just fine, but instead trying to sort of fabricate a myth around what was happening with that blog, I think totally, I mean, just unconscionable. I mean, I don't know who came up with that decision and thought it was a good one.
Well, I think it was a decision that wasn't really made, and I think you're 100% right. I think, I would have been okay if it would have found out that it was PR people going around and doing that. I mean, just
oh, totally,
front.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who cares? Who cares? And that's another example that we talk about. You know, that's good to point out is that how quickly things can go from you know, okay to absolutely horrible. And then there's this persistency. And now, always, every time you go out there and Google, you're going to see that story in there. So it's always going to be. So why not be upfront to begin with?
Yep.
Well, and even more importantly, we've talked in the past about that story and how much of an opportunity that Walmart actually missed and Edelman actually missed in the sense that rather than just skipping the process of selection, they could have made that the first event and the actual blog the second event and then the follow-up from that blog the third event. Instead of just one activity, now they have three.
Good point. Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I think ultimately, while you guys are sort of thinking about some wrap-up stuff for this, I think ultimately what I would like to get across is that, you know, strip away the descriptions of transparency, authenticity, community, relationship, all that stuff, and put yourself, whether you're a company that's, you know, 3,000 employees and 10,000 customers or a startup just getting off the ground, and ask yourselves from the get-go is, why am I creating this company? Why is it here? And what kind of, what do I owe the people who are going to pay money? And money can be time, by the way, if it's a free item. What do I owe these people in terms of keeping them in the loop about what I'm doing? And, you know, every day they come first, because without them, I don't exist. And I think keeping that up front there really makes a difference. It helps on the decision-making process. So, when you get into sharing or not sharing certain things.
So to that point, and I guess kind of a final question, can companies, is this something that the individuals within companies who have been operating this way, is that something that they can be taught, or do they need to hire anew to bring in people with a different mindset, more centered around transparency and authenticity?
I think probably within every company, there is a person who is that kind of person, who operates from that point of view. But I think it has to be ingrained in the culture. I think with baby steps, you can teach an attitude shift, but I think it is a good idea to bring in fresh blood that understands how to deal that way.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time today. Outstanding conversation, and looking forward to continuing this conversation, and thanks again for your time.
My pleasure.
Big thanks to Deb for coming on the show. You can find out more about Deb in the show notes at www.clueunit.com. We'll have a link to Deb's blog as well as some of the other stuff we talked about in today's interview. And that completes the Transparency Monthly theme. Tune in next week for a lightning round of topics as well as a hint for the June theme. See you then.